nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome everyone. I'm sitting here with the founder of Going Places Nonprofit, Katie Blomquist. Katie, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I love having you. I love what you're doing online. I see you on the Instagram stories and the Facebook, just giving everyone the behind the scenes look of what it is that you're doing all day and every day. But why don't you tell us a little bit about Going Places Nonprofit?
Sure. So Going Places is a nonprofit that I founded in 2017. I was a teacher at a low-income, high-poverty elementary school, and I did a GoFundMe that went viral, and I ended up raising over $80,000 in 3 months, and I got all 650 kids in my school a custom bike lock and helmet. And that, you know, kind of opened this door to this idea that joy is a piece of our social-emotional health, and it's something that's often overlooked when people think about nonprofits. And it is a basic need. You know, our social emotional health as a child can determine what type of adult we become. And that adult is going to be an interactive member of the community that we each live in. And if we can have a hand in affecting that when they're children, just by simply providing them with something that can do so much for them, I say, let's do it. So I founded the nonprofit and I left teaching. I was ready to move on to the next thing anyway. And I've been running it full time ever since.
That is so cool. And you don't just like, now you've upgraded to giving away custom bikes, and you don't just give away a custom bike. Was it everyone in the whole school gets a custom bike? Is that what we're doing now?
Oh, that's what we've done since day one. When I was the teacher at the school, it was all 650 kids and they were all custom bikes. They were white and neon green, and we named them the Future. And every year we switch out the neon color. So we've had neon red, neon yellow, neon green, neon orange. Every year we change the name. We've had the Future, the Pursuit, the Purpose, the Adventure. And now we're on to a neon aqua type color, teal and white. And it's called the Reason for 2021.
Is there anyone that doesn't just light up when you talk about what you do?
People do love it. And it makes me feel really good because it's something that we can all connect with. It's not, you know, the latest video game or hoverboard or something that some people care about, some people don't. A bike is something that, you know, going back to black and white photos, you know, we see pictures of our grandparents and great grandparents standing there next to pictures of a bike. It's something that every child experience and loved and was part of their memories. And those that didn't feel affected by that, they're like, I didn't have a bike and it was awful. Like everyone can connect on one side of the coin or the other and feels passionate about it. I mean, I've had people say to me as a kid, their bike was their only escape from their stepdad, and they don't know what would have happened had they not been able to get out and escape for, you know, the day because of that. And it's things like that where, I mean, that's a lot of the home lives of a lot of the kids we're giving these bikes to. It's so much for them. It's freedom and escape from an unpredictable home life. It's something to own of value when a lot of these kids don't even have a bed they can call their own. They have nothing that's truly theirs, a place to just go to be alone and decompress, something of value to build confidence over. And it's also a sense of restored innocence when a lot of these kids have had that taken from them in one way or another. I mean, it's just, you kind of feel like a kid when you get on a bike, and imagine a kid actually getting to feel like a kid when they have so many other things at home that take that away from them.
No, that's fantastic. As a kid that moved around a lot, by me a lot, I moved 36 times before I graduated high school. So yeah. having a bike and being able to get away and explore the town or the city, that means something. That is that mobility, that's that freedom. That's the get out of the craziness out in the house and go out and explore and, you know, be away. And it's really quite wonderful. How did you decide on bikes as the vehicle for what you're trying to do?
So a little boy in my class named Jawan, I taught first grade, and he and I were very close, and he was really unmotivated and just struggling. And I just kept trying to motivate him and explain to him, you know, you gotta put some effort in here. And So I realized that I needed to kind of bond with him and earn his trust outside of school. So I started taking him on adventures. You know, after school on weekends, we would go to, you know, the guitar center so he could play real instruments. We went to the Firehouse Museum, to plays, to real restaurants, to the beach. I took him on a boat, like all these different things out there that he could do in life. I was like, but you have to get through school first. You got to put forth this effort. You could do any of these things. And on his birthday that year, we were at Walmart after he went and did a bunch of fun stuff. And I was letting him pick out his birthday gifts. And the gift he asked me for was a bike. And that's when I was like, what? You don't have a bike? And I, you know, here I am, this teacher, saturated in, you know, in this environment of poverty. I know the pillows and the books and the shoes and the socks and the coats and the things these kids don't have. There are still even things people don't think about. I still didn't think about the things that we all take for granted. And it's these memories that we had as a child, and it's things like a bike. And people think of it instantly as this like toy, and they don't even think about all the things it could do, like the things I just mentioned, for a child. And so when he mentioned that, I just couldn't stop thinking about, you know, what would my childhood have been like without a bike? You know, what would I have done? I was an only kid. Like I loved my bike. And so I started asking around other kids in my class, you know, do you have a bike? Like maybe it's just him. And the answer was pretty much no. I mean, it was maybe there was an old hand-me-down, but it was all rusted. The general consensus was no. So I thought for a split second, well, what if I just get my, you know, do a GoFundMe and get my class a bike? But then I instantly was like, no, how could I leave out so-and-so from last year and the kid about the year before that? They still need one and they're in fourth grade now. And then I started thinking, well, what about the kid in my coat, you know, the other two first grade teacher's room? And I just thought, I can't leave anybody out. You know, all of these kids need this. And so, you know, these low income schools, there's 31 of them in Charleston County School District, and almost all of them, about 95% of kids live at or below the poverty line. So, you know, I don't know if you know what the poverty line is. I assumed it was like a teacher's salary, like no joke. It's not. It's like $11,000 a year. And so when 95% of those kids are living at or below the poverty line of that, the 5% they're living above the poverty line but are still zoned for the school. I mean, okay, so their parents are making $15,000 a year. I mean, we're not going to leave out those 5%. So that's why every single child gets one.
Yeah, I mean, as coming from a kid with that kind of background, because I lived in trailer parks and foster homes, I was in five different foster homes, and not every time did I have, in my case, I didn't have a bike in my foster parents' houses. It's interesting that you didn't want to leave anyone behind. I know we're not talking about the policy, the controversial school policy about no child left behind. We're talking about bikes here. And so what does it take to put together a campaign, a GoFundMe page that goes viral, that makes 80 grand in 3 months? What are the elements of that? And how is that reproduced? This is something that you teach, right?
It became a second job. I mean, I would go teach, I'd come home and I'd work on this till midnight. And I did everything and anything to get people's eyes on it. I emailed every single radio station in South Carolina. I emailed every single bike magazine I could find anywhere. I would tweet with them on Twitter. I would tag them in posts. I would forward them my campaign. I shared it on social media, and everyone else I know started sharing it on social media. And, you know, just in the first day, we raised like $1,200, and I was like losing my mind. I thought, you know, it was so much for me to raise. It was just people wanted to share it because, you know, I always talk about this wow factor that is what gets people sharing, donating, it gets media, and it's the ambition level that goes above and beyond what the average person's doing. Had I just tried to get the 15 kids in my class a bike, I'm sure I would have accomplished it. It's not that much money. It's not that many kids. It's not, I hate to say not newsworthy, but it's not the added level of 650 kids. That's not, the average person isn't doing that. And so people want to share that and donate to it because it's exciting to be part of something that's so big. And, you know, it's also not something that everyone's doing. It's not a shoe drive or a coat drive. Those are all still great. People should still do them. But it's something that's different. It's, you know, it's something that hasn't really been done. People have gotten bikes for kids at schools, but is it 650? And are they custom bikes? And, you know, so it's that added level is what got word spreading. And I actually won a contest through GoFundMe. They had a contest for anyone that had a GoFundMe campaign that was connected to their school. Whoever raised the most money in X amount of time would win $10,000 for their school, not towards their campaign, but for their school. And I won that. So when I won that money, every news station in Charleston, including the Post and Courier, came here, and that's a national publication. And so once it was in the Post and Courier, every TV show host, you know, their producers were calling, and Twitter partnered with TJ Maxx, and they picked six women that were doing great things in the community around the country and highlighted each of us for 2 weeks. So that launched and that took off. And it was just one thing just kept snowballing into the next. And so since then, I've been able to keep up with national media flying in every year to continue to cover the work we're doing. And that's extremely rare for national media to keep retelling the same story, which is, you know, which is what's hard with media, is once it's been told once, it's like, who cares? It's like, well, it still matters. And so I've been able to keep that up through networking, through continuing to, you know, add more schools. We've got more of a story to tell each year, and getting big companies to sponsor us, like Hyundai, and, you know, it's people want to be part of it, and they've earned our trust, and they see the big things we're doing, and that adds to our credibility. So yeah, as you said, like, I teach people how to do this now through an online course where I show you how to create your wow factor. And I take you one-on-one through the first 7 months of creating that nonprofit or revamping. Maybe some people started, most people who've signed up for my course are actually people that have already sort of started and are like, whoa, this is way harder than I thought it was going to be. And I help them do the networking, how to do it right, how to get the fundraising done right. You know, we had 15 companies reach out to us in December and say, we want you to be our end of year beneficiaries. Like, I didn't reach out to any of them. And that was the first year that something that big has happened. I mean, 15 companies, to think that people at 15 companies sat around a room and were like, who should we give our end of year giving to? And someone's like, how about going places? And then everyone agreed. I'm like, that is such a good feeling. You know, so I teach people how to duplicate that, because after 3.5 years, you know, we're at a place where it takes most nonprofits 8 years or more to get to. Because I run it full time. I get paid a salary, and I've been doing that since day one and been able to keep it up.
Oh, that's really fantastic. There's a lot of people that we talk to, a lot of listeners to this show that are still trying to figure that out and figure out and find what their wow factor is. So it's great that you break that down in an easily digestible course and walk them through how to do that. You know, like us at the Nonprofit Architect, our goal is to help you get your next $30,000 in donations. And what might that take? That might take revamping your board a little bit. That might take rewriting some of your copy for your end of the year requests and all of these things. But what it really takes is creating that wow factor. And what are you really doing? And how's the impact you're doing? Are you bringing people into the fold? Are you creating a thing? Are you bettering your community? And if you are, does your community know that you're creating a better community? Are they involved? Are they part of the process? And I love what you're doing. And I love that you don't have any kids left out. That is amazing. So let's talk about some of your clients a little bit. Talk about, I mean, you don't have to name names, or you don't have to name the company or the organization, but like, what do people come up with when they decide what their wow factors are? What are some of the wow factors that you've come across?
So in brainstorming with people, you know, I've had realtors say, I know I want to start a nonprofit, but I don't know what. And I say, well, let's talk about it. You know, when we kind of go through things that are already out there, and, you know, I've helped them come up with the idea of, how about, you know, when people get, there's Habitat for Humanity, right? Like, you get this home, but then it's an empty home. And there's lots of companies that give furniture and all that stuff. But what about the stuff that makes a home a home? The stuff that realtors are trying to, like, put, you know, make you visual. When a realtor is selling a home, they're like visualizing yourself here, like this luxurious, like amazing place. Well, just a couch and a chair doesn't make you feel that way. It's the decor. So what about a nonprofit that helps, you know, put the painting on the wall and the candle on the table, the little things that don't matter, but make a home feel like a home? It's not the essentials, but it's the things that actually make you feel great to be home. And those things matter. And, you know, making you have pride in your home is feeling like, you know, looking around and being happy with, you know, with how it looks and feels. So we've talked about things like that. I've talked to a chiropractor who wants to go into schools and not analyze, do an overview like kids. Cause a lot of these kids sleep on floors, really bad mattresses. They, you know, they're going to create back and spine issues for the rest of their life. So kind of like doing an overview of them and then donating high quality mattresses to them. We've talked about Christmas trees. We've talked about, you know, for me, my brain always goes straight to joy because that's what we're all about. And it's the thing that is left out a lot with nonprofits. So it's kind of like, that's where my brain goes really fast is, well, how can we turn what you're passionate about into something that brings people joy? And we've had someone that's created a center for women, and it's all women, but it's a place where they can go and they can take classes and they can better themselves. Someone that is giving back to, it started with just like groceries when COVID started. And now they're, whatever people need, they're going out and they're getting it. So it's kind of this like a la carte custom need. They go out and they get it. So I've helped people brainstorm those types of ideas.
That's really cool. Out of all the nonprofits that I've talked to over the last couple of years, hundreds of nonprofits, we never quite really have got to the wow factor of what makes you different. You know, when I screen people to be guests on the show, I say, yeah, I've talked to some, you know, marketing gurus and stuff, but what makes you different? What is the thing that you're all about that you're going to bring to the show that's going to show, you know, the audience something new, something exciting, something fun? And what I'm describing to them without putting a name on it was the wow factor. And now that I'm totally going to steal that from you, the wow factor is to come off. I'm going to use that on all my, you know, all my labeling. The wow factor with Travis Johnson, not Katie. Definitely not Katie.
Well, I didn't come up with the wow factor, so.
I know. It's not true.
Okay, in town, there's two big pet, animal nonprofits. And honestly, I don't know the difference between what they do. And I feel like I should. They're both great. People always talk about them and donate to them and volunteer at them. But surely there's something that they're doing that's different between the two. And I feel like people should know. And there's three of us in town that do bike-related things. And I know the other two nonprofits, I know the executive directors and the founders, and they're great nonprofits. Our bikes are custom and we give to every single child in the whole school. It's not just some. So it's all or nothing, kind of go big or go home is my philosophy with it.
And I don't blame you. And I was so excited to see in your Facebook story that you had a young lady that didn't get a bike right away. She's in a wheelchair. And now it's been a month after Christmas, but you finally got this bike created and delivered. How exciting is that?
Oh, so we gave 500 bikes last month between two schools. And ironically, both schools had a wheelchair-bound child at it. And there's only 50 in our whole school district, K-12. And ironically, two of the schools we picked had them. And so we're obviously never going to leave a child out. And so, you know, we had to create these, you know, do extra fundraising because these bikes can be anywhere from $800 to $1,300 because it's custom for their exact disabilities. Their OT at school has to help fill out the paperwork and measure and do all this stuff. But the seat for her bike did not get in on time. And I was so angry. Like, you would have believed that company heard it from me. Cause I was like, how could you do this to her? Like, I was so upset because that one child is feeling left out, you know, at the bike reveal when the entire school gets a bike. But we made it extra special for her. The right seat finally came in. We went yesterday and both her parents came and her whole class came out. And she's only 4 years old. She was the sweetest little girl. And she came out and we had the bike in the gym covered with a big moving blanket. And we like revealed it to her and she was so happy, the smile on her face. And I'll be posting pictures. I did put it in our story, but I'll be posting pictures to the wall probably later this week from it, from both kids, from both schools and the wheelchairs that got their bikes. So, you know, it was something that wasn't ideal, but really at the end of the day, it just matters every kid gets their bike, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that you have that follow through and then delivery. And, you know, when you post this picture of a little girl and when this goes live, you'll have to go back for a few months. We're at the end of January here. You can see this girl's smile through the mask. That's how big the smile is. You can see it right through the mask. And it's fantastic. You know, I talked to someone else that's doing not exactly bikes, but they focus on cycling. My team Triumph up in Wisconsin, and Kristen Jensen. And his wow factor is he's got partnerships with Trek. And he brings the Trek employees out to these events. So it's a different way to create that kind of that sponsorship and that partnership and getting that interaction. Because one thing to donate, it's another thing to be a part of the experience. And it sounds like that's what you're doing as well. And you know, so many people are on board with that.
Yeah, Trek is a great company. The owner, one of the Trek bike shops near us, has offered to help, and they're great. We use Kent Bikes, which is number 3 in the country behind Schwinn and Huffy, and we're able to custom make them. I actually talked to Trek about this before we even found Kent. I don't believe that they were making custom bikes, because that was a name I had definitely heard of, but Kent Bikes has been unbelievable. It's a family-owned business. They're huge, and they're able to make these bikes custom for us. And they're only, you know, the bike, lock, and helmet we get from them, all three all together, only $100.
Man, you can't beat that.
And that's, yeah, I mean, that's like, you can't find a bike for $100 ever, let alone custom. Helmets are like $25 in the store. So we get them for $6.
Yeah, the bike that's in my garage that I ride when it's not so chilly out definitely wasn't under $100. So that's awesome. Hey, Kent Bikes is doing so well for you. One other major thing that you're doing that I want to point out and share with our startup nonprofits and all our guests here today is that you actually use Instagram and Facebook stories to talk about dang near everything you're doing. Not a lot of people are doing that in the nonprofit space. Why did you decide to do that, and how's that working out for you?
You want your followers, your stakeholders, to be invested in what you're doing. They want to feel like they're along for the ride and that they're part of this journey. They want to celebrate your highs with you, and they want to mourn your losses with you. You know, I don't try and make it seem like everything is great 24/7. I'll let them know, like, man, this, you know, we're struggling, because people, not everyone is struggling in COVID right now. Not everyone lost their jobs, and people can help if things are not going well, and be honest with people about it. But also, it's, you know, I do something called Follow Up Friday. Every Friday I go live on Going Places Instagram, and I just talk about what I did all week. Like this Friday, I'll talk about that I did this podcast. And when it comes out, I'll say, hey, now I've posted. Like, you know, if I was on a panel, like a networking panel, or I had a meeting, or someone wanted to have coffee and talk about sponsorship, like I just talk about literally I go through my phone and I write down everything I did on my calendar, and I tell everyone about it, because then they feel like they're part of my week. And as I'm doing things, I'm putting it in the story, you know, just something silly. Like my roommate got me a coffee mug that says joy, because our hashtag is spread joy. She got me that as one of my Christmas gifts, and I drank coffee out of it today, and I took a picture of it and I put it in my story. And I just said, you know, hashtag spread joy. And I put it in Going Places story too. Just silly things like that. Just keeping people, I want people to get to know me, because when you know someone, you like them, you trust them. I don't want to be just this person, Katie, who's just doing this and that. Like I want them to get to know me and be part of my day. And then they feel invested.
Yeah, it's nothing like being a donor. I've been on all sides of the nonprofit world, volunteer, donor, board member, and it's nothing like being a donor and you don't hear from them all stinking year, but they get this end of the year letter that says, hey, remember how you liked us last year? Like us again this year with your checkbook, please, and thank you. And you're like, what? Like, what have you done all year? Like, I haven't seen anything from you. I haven't heard anything from you guys. How did COVID affect you? How did you impact the people that you cared about and affect the way you delivered services? Were you still able to make an impact? Did you need more money? You didn't add, like, they're not included. And when you're not included, you don't have that buy-in. It's hard for people to want to say yes. But just like what you're doing and just like what our friends in Wisconsin are doing, they're getting people involved and keeping them involved. And once you have that, the ask is easy. It's almost like they have their wallet up. You're like, you wanted some of this money, right? You know, they're not like trying to like hide their wallet or like, oh, you know, I don't know if I can give this here. Like their wallet's open. They're like, is she going to ask? Is she going to ask? Here you go. Thanks, Katie. Thanks for asking. Thanks for doing what you're doing. And thanks for having me involved. because all that stuff matters.
People want to feel like they're part of something successful. You know, if you a new restaurant opens and everyone's talking about it and going there and putting pictures of it in their story, you're like, oh, I really want to try that. But if you drive by a restaurant constantly and it's empty, you're like, well, I don't really want to go there. Like, no one's talking about it. It's no one's there. It's kind of the same with a nonprofit. You want people to talk about it. And, you know, I would say 8.5 out of 10 people have heard about my nonprofit in Charleston. They say, oh, I think I heard about that. And I'm like, yes, because, you know, with a normal product, it takes, they say, what, 5 to 6 times for information to cross your eyes before you actually purchase. And that's when you're going to get a product in exchange for your money. We're just saying, like, give us money and you get a good feeling in return. Like,
we're going to get so, joy for $10.99. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a hard product to sell.
It takes twice that, if not triple that amount of times for our name to come across your eyes. And we're not having the ads that for-profit businesses are having. And so think about that. That's how much work I need to do with getting out there, with making partnerships with businesses and networking and putting stuff on our social media and really making these major connections, because that's what's going to get that information to cross people's eyes. And then they feel like, okay, I know and trust this company and this nonprofit. I keep hearing about them. They must be doing something good. And like I said, people want to be part of things that are successful. And if they feel like this is a failing nonprofit, they're not going to want to give their money to it, because that money is now used through it in the garbage. It's, oh, they're going to fail. Like, I really want to donate $100 for a bike. If can they really pull this off? So it's about making sure people know that you can pull this off and that you are pulling this off. So, you know, we haven't posted our end of year stats yet, because so much money came in literally in like those last few days of December. Some of the checks haven't even gotten to us yet, but they're in the mail. So, you know, when I send out an email, the newsletter to all of our stakeholders, be like, hey, look at the impact you had this year. Like, look what we were still able to do in COVID. Of course, it wasn't as big as last year, but I don't think anybody was bigger this year, but we still were pretty darn close. So that shows that we know what we're doing. And that's what people really need to be doing, is you got to put that effort into their social media. And another huge, huge thing that I have to brag on ourselves for doing, I think better than most nonprofits do, is we promote the businesses that do things for us way more than I think a lot of nonprofits do. And that comes back to the social media thing. I have a free social media intern, and it's a lot to keep up with. And we have a calendar that I tell her what to post. I create most of the posts, but she starts to catch on and knows how to make them herself too. And we don't just say, hey, thanks for this check once. We continue to talk about these companies over, you know, they go into a hierarchy of how, you know, a certain amount of posts per month. And we thank them and share the good things they have going on. It's not just, hey, thanks for the check. It's like, hey, have you checked out what Squeeze Marketing's doing? Look, they just did this awesome project at, you know, called Charleston. And we share that stuff. So that makes those companies want to keep doing things for us. And it's letting the public know, hey, you should use this company because they're giving to a nonprofit.
Yeah, if you're a nonprofit and you're not sure how to thank your sponsors, definitely take Katie's advice or check out my interview with Andrea Shirey. And she talks about taking out an ad where they already advertise, because you're showing their customers what a great impact they had with your nonprofit. So you're hitting them where their people are, and that's much bigger impact than just sharing on your social media. I'm not saying that you know, in a derogatory way. That's definitely a huge way to keep that partnership going. But you're showing
nonprofits that have the money to do that. Like, not everyone can pay to have ads either. So it's a good start. And then when you can get that next level, for sure, it's a great idea.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Katie, what is a question that you are surprised that people just don't ask you?
Like people who are trying to start a nonprofit or donors, what kind of?
Anything. I know that always I have guests on and they have, you know, like, I never get asked this question. What is that question that you have the answer for that just no one ever ends up asking you?
I don't know. I guess the answer is, I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Like, what am I surprised no one asks? But something that people are surprised when they do ask is how long the process takes from Like when we say, oh, we want to give bikes at Christmas time. People are like, great. I always give at Christmas time. Like, oh, no. At Christmas time, we're already, fundraising for a year later. They're always surprised at how long it takes to raise money, order bikes, build them. And that, so people are shocked. It's this huge process and how long it takes to do that, because it's just me fundraising.
Yeah, you're not just getting the standard bike at Walmart and you're going to pick it up and throw it together in an afternoon. You're putting together 600 custom bikes that have all different names, color schemes, and all this stuff to make sure they have the helmet, the bike lock, and the bike all put together. That's not anything small.
No, and then we transport them. I can't load all those myself. We need volunteers to load, unload several semi-trucks. We need a warehouse, and we don't pay for any of that stuff. We don't pay for the trucks, the warehouse, anything. Like, this is all donated stuff on trade. That's another thing I'm very, very adamant about doing, is not every money you spend on that stuff is money not going towards your mission. And I am psycho about not paying for that stuff. Like, we just got our third office donated to us. And this one seems to be a more permanent spot, but it's with BW Mitchum Trucking, which is a huge trucking company. They actually donated $2,500 to us in December and transported some of our bikes. Like, they're an amazing company. And they just gave us four office spaces in this empty building that we get to use now. And that's another huge part of building these relationships, is getting stuff on trade, not wasting your money paying for services that you can easily build and leverage a relationship with over sponsorship. It costs me nothing to promote somebody and give them a sponsorship. And, that can go a long way when you do it right. And, that's, I forgot where I was going with how that came up. I forgot what I was saying, but,
maximize your partnerships.
Yes. And the time it takes and how much goes into everything.
Well, hey, Katie, if people want to find you with Going Places, or if they're looking to get the coaching that you provide, where can they find you?
You can email me. It's Katie at goingplacesnonprofit.org. And you can check out our website. It's goingplacesnonprofit.org. Our social media is always updated much quicker than our website. And that's where you'll always find exactly what's going on, the day-to-day stuff I've been talking about. On Instagram, it's going_places_nonprofit. And on Facebook, it's just @goingplacesnonprofit.
Well, hey, Katie, this is fantastic. Thanks so much for coming in and providing value to my audience. And kudos to all the wonderful things you're doing with Going Places.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.